foot six above sea level. I grab my mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. The big sound from underground. We bring the truth to places truth is never heard before. We bring the sound communication of our tribal war. Dark vision fly by helicopters in the night. Attempt triangulation of our
station. Hello and welcome to A Public Affair. It's Tuesday, so that means you get me. I'm your host. Today, I'm Carousel Baird. Thanks everyone for tuning in. Today, we are going to talk about issues from the state budget that impact Madison and Dane County. Today, we have two fabulous leaders. My guests today are two fabulous state leaders who have also served as local elected officials. Representative Therese Brousseau has been a member of the State Assembly since 1998. 15 years! That's fabulous. Therese is shocked. Because she's only 16 years old, so it's amazing how she's done it all this time. Prior to that, she served 8 years on the Dane County Board. And she's my state representative, which is fabulous. She's a Wisconsin native, born in Green Bay, a graduate of UW, has worked at the La Follette Institute at UW, and as a consultant for Wisconsin Public Radio, and many, many other things. And then we also have Representative Melissa Sargent, and she's serving her first term on the State Assembly and has also served 4 years on the Dane County Board, including doing both currently. She's my colleague on the county board. She's a Madison native, born and raised here, graduate of East High and UW. She currently has 3 sons in the Madison Public School and a fourth that will get there eventually one day. And she's a small business owner here in Madison. So, first of all, thank you both. You are such incredibly fabulous women leaders and just leaders in your own right here in Madison. Thank you for all that you do to advance our city and our county and our state forward. I appreciate it. And thank you for joining me today. So, let's sort of get right to it. I want to remind everyone to give us a call if they have any questions for Representatives Brousseau and Sargent. We welcome your questions. You can call in at area code 608-256-2001 or toll free area code 866-899-WORT. Or, this is exciting, we're going to go social media. You can also email us there's my cluelessness already. You can send us your questions on Twitter. Our Twitter account is at WORT Talk, WORT Talk. Or you can send a message on Facebook. Our Facebook page is A Public Affair 89.9 FM Madison. All right, so got all the technicalities out of the way. Let's have a great conversation here, ladies. Let's talk first some of the sort of big ticket items that happened in Wisconsin, and let's sort of see how they've impacted Madison. I think the one on the top of everyone's mind locally is public schools, the cut of funding, and the creation of vouchers. Do we want to start there?
I'm happy to start there. We do have a budget that was over 1,300 pages full of really bad stuff. I think a lot of people have the voucher school issue on their mind and what kind of impact that's going to have statewide, but particularly in Madison. I don't know if everyone's familiar with the process, but if students want to go to a voucher school, that accepting school has to have 25 students that are voucher students before they can get accredited. So I'm really not sure, and I think a lot of people aren't sure how the chicken and egg is going to work there. Schools do have to get accredited. However, as I read the budget, there is absolutely nothing to the accreditation process other than saying we want to be a voucher school. There's 10 days for DPI to reply or certify or whatever the process is going to be.
DPI is the Department of Public
Instruction. Yeah, Department of Public Instruction. But the governor vetoed a provision that required some accreditation review, I think it was. I've got the language somewhere in this pile. So really, I guess it's just, you know, apply to be a voucher school, and then you do need to get 25 students. Now that, because there is a cap statewide, but there's a cap statewide other than Milwaukee and Racine of only 500 students for this next year.
Per district?
No, for the state.
500 students? Oh, 500. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So, but, I mean, that's sort of a, is that a little bit of a... tempting trick that they started small. They say only 500 students across the state of Wisconsin can enter this. We're just trying to sort of gauge if public is interested. But then is there a plan that a year or two from now that 500-person limit disappears?
So next year, there will be an additional 500 added into it the way the budget was written. However, we have to remind ourselves that this is really something that doesn't need to go into a budget. This is policy. Voucher schools are a policy item. Mm-hmm. And at any point in time, our colleagues on the Tea Party side of the aisle could introduce a bill that expands voucher schools statewide. It could happen this fall. We don't really hear about these things until they are introduced.
As long as it's not a dollar amount tied to it, they could do it at any time.
That's correct.
And, you know, it's really sad because if any issue in this state deserves really, you know, a discussion and study, it is public schools and the future of public schools. And this really has received we've had no debate. No debate on whether or not this is helpful to public schools, where we're going, really. It's just been accepted by the Republican Party that voucher schools are the answer. We know that it's really because of the money that is coming from this nationally into Wisconsin for races. But no discussion about what public schools have meant to this state for, you know, over 100 years. And I was thinking just yesterday, the one-room schoolhouse, you know, where everybody in the community went to, the public schools that you and I may have gone to. Admittedly, I went to a Catholic school for grade school. But and speaking of Catholic schools, I do think that they are the schools that will be most advantaged by this, maybe some evangelical schools.
And on that same note, watching what happened in Milwaukee and Racine, one of the things that we need to keep in mind is we aren't going to be taking disadvantaged students typically and turning them into voucher students. In order to be eligible for a voucher school, you have to have a family income of $71,000 a year for a family of four
or less.
Mm-hmm. However, that to me, we don't have a standard definition of what it means to be accepting state funds. So a family of four people that has an income up to $71,000 a year is eligible for vouchers. Typically, most of these students are already enrolled in private schools. These are people who found a way to put their kids into private schools, and they don't need that additional. So they're going to ultimately be taking these state dollars away from our public schools. And they are ready children that are not in the public schools.
Well, I'm even surprised to hear the 71,000 because I actually thought it was lower than that. I mean,
it was lower.
71,000 is a pretty decent salary for a family of four. You know, my family of four isn't making too much more than that, and I consider myself in a position to pretty much provide for my family to the full extent that I desire to.
Well, in the city of Madison, admittedly, it's harder. Our cost of living is higher. But there are a lot of areas in the state where that is indeed a very good income. The question that we have in terms of other areas of the state is, do parents there really have other schools to send their children to, and in many cases they don't, and this is going to have a devastating effect, as did the cuts last session, the last budget, on the resources that their local public school has. And the public school in a lot of these communities is more than just the school. It's also kind of the community center, mm-hmm. and the one thing that holds together a small community that has nothing much else other than maybe some bars and a small grocery store or whatever.
Even
a
in small town, that's very accurate for small town, but I find that that's even accurate for here in Madison. I mean, in my West Side neighborhood, we go to Van Heist, we get together, we have events. Mm-hmm. I've made friends from Van Heist. We talk about schools being involved with the PTO. It's the way that I find out more that's going on. So I think that's even more true for smaller communities, but it's still very true here in Madison.
Schools are definitely a cornerstone of our society. And ultimately, by doing this, we're going to be creating two public school systems. We're going to be creating a totally unaccountable public school system, funded 100% by our tax dollars at the expense of our current public school system. And it is going to be detrimental to our communities and our neighborhoods.
Carousel, I think you really pointed out something that those of us who care about our neighborhoods and our communities worry about, which is that schools have been a uniting factor in terms of neighborhoods. In fact, I've really been surprised that the real estate community even, you know, supports this, because they know that neighborhoods that have popular schools retain their property values, for instance. But schools really have a lot to do with the quality of life in a community, and to rip apart that fabric and set up two different school systems, if you can call the school choice a system, is really going much beyond saying we're going to allow people alternatives in terms of education for the children. It really has much wider social implications. And I don't know if they can't think about that or it hasn't occurred to them, or it doesn't matter, or one of the issues we've got is that most of our fellow legislators represent primarily rural areas. So on the other side of the fence.
We also need to keep in mind that this doesn't come at without expense. The property taxes for our homeowners across the state are going to increase, and that is because of the increased cost to the voucher school system. So despite the fact that our colleagues on the other side of the aisle tend to call themselves fiscal conservatives and want to be budget hawks, they are actually costing our property taxpayers an increase in what they're going to be paying to the state to fund these voucher schools.
And also, isn't there going to be my understanding was there's a tax break that if you send your child to private school, the tuition up to $10,000 per child can be a tax credit on your tax bill. So actually, this is going to take money from the pockets of the general public and add it back into families that are already able to afford mm-hmm. the cost of private school.
That's different than the voucher schools, but mm-hmm. there is definitely another provision in the budget that provides folks that choose to send their children to private school, that can already afford to send their children to private school, mm. a tax break when they do their taxes.
That's how we get out of the loophole of the $71,000. So $71,000 or lower, at least currently, those people can qualify for vouchers that get them into private schools for free. And if you don't qualify for that, don't worry, you can write it off on your taxes.
That is correct.
Yes, that's very correct.
It's good to have that sort of articulated. Hey, I wanted to remind everyone, we're here with Representative Therese Brousseau and Representative Melissa Sargent. And I'm acknowledging, we do have a caller coming in. Excellent. And I'm acknowledging right now, I'm realizing that I hope the listeners know that there are three women in the room. I'm not quite sure.
Four.
Well, there are four women. There are three women talking. Powerful women all over the building of Ward at all times. But so maybe we'll try and designate, we'll point out who's talking for a moment so people can help differentiate the voices and know who's saying what, even though I think the three of us are all on the same page, and I'm more than happy to take credit for any of the fabulous things either of the two of you say. We do have a caller, so let's bring that caller in. Caller, will you tell us your name and your question?
My name is Phil, and I have a question for Ms. Brousseau. I see this in a bigger context. I see this as a war of the ultra-wealthy on the middle class. It's a divide-and-conquer technique, those under 71 fighting those over 71,000. It's an ideal way for the ultra-wealthy, who are pulling all the strings in our society through their Citizens United allowance, to divide the middle class and to create dissension and tension and division amongst them, thereby rendering the middle class powerless to mobilize electorally to overturn the egregious and very unpatriotic actions of the ultra-wealthy. So I would see this in that context and advise listeners to think about taking a stance in their personal communities against any initiative to expand vouchers, and to call their representatives and let them know that they see this in that context.
So, Phil, yeah. I think those are excellent points, and I sort of, when I'm listening to you, I sort of hear two different thoughts which I think are worth talking about. One is, you know, is there a class distinction that's pulling all the strings? My experience in Madison, pleasantly so, is that even people with higher incomes in Madison, disproportionately perhaps from the rest of the state, still give a darn about the lower class, acknowledge that there's workers and rights that need to be expanded. So, Therese, do you want to sort of talk about that, and Melissa, about your experience of sort of the class division that exists maybe statewide and then maybe locally?
Well, Phil is right, and this is not something that's new with the Walker administration or even the voucher movement. I think the voucher movement is a vehicle that the right discovered and the wealthy discovered would be a good way to move their agenda. But the Republican Party for decades has been laying the groundwork for this and for other policies. And we know that now from ALEC. A lot of people have heard about the American Legislative Exchange
Council,
excuse me, that really has developed a blueprint for Republican, conservative, right-wing action nationwide, and we're seeing the same agenda sweeping the nation. But the Republicans for a long time have understood that you divide people to conquer. And that has been working in a very basic way. Many years ago, I read an article in the New York Times that talked about the conservative brain, the liberal brain, or whatever, and it said something that really stuck with me. It said, I hope I'm using the right term, but anthropologically, people respond first to fear and second to reason. The example I use is you hear a car backfire, your first response is to jump, your second is, oh, that was a car. This article said that the Republican power structure has figured out how to grab people at the time the car backfires versus the reason. For the noise, and basically make people fearful about a lot of things. And right now, it's the Tea Party, as we know, it's fearful of government, no matter what. Even if they're using government programs, they don't seem to understand that. But they, you know, they're fearful of government. But the Republican Party has really manipulated this for a long, long time to divide people. And one of the things that they used that worked very well in Act 10 was, I think we all know that for decades they went after public sector workers. Mm-hmm. And it finally worked. All the conditions came together and it worked. And they had enough people who were upset with public sector workers because public sector workers had more than them. In terms of benefits and health care, et cetera. So, I mean, this is not mm-hmm. the voucher school program is a great
Another
vehicle for them
it.
To use now, but it really is part of a much more complex and very well executed plan that they've had in the works for decades.
Well, and I think the second part of Phil's questions, which builds off of that, Melissa, I don't know if you want to sort of talk about, you know, how this impacts us on the local level is that what it does do is divide us. And so now instead of all of us fighting Scott Walker or higher elected officials that we have concerns with, we now start fighting ourselves. And this is the fight isn't on the streets of Madison today. The fight is going to come up soon, but far enough away from this budget that we won't be talking about Scott Walker, but we'll be arguing on the local level, on the county board, on the city council, on the school board, to our principals. What should we be doing in our neighborhood? Who has a voucher? Who doesn't? Where are you going? Why do you go this way? Do you sort of see that as part of the internal brewing that happens on a local level?
Absolutely. And the Republicans have been very good about doing that. And as Representative Therese Purceau pointed out, that is how we got to where we are now. And we need to remind ourselves that we have really important shared values with one another, and we can overcome this attack that's been planted at us and has been happening for decades. And we can be smart about how we overcome it. But it really has to do with having conversations rather than taking the bite for the divisiveness that is being planted at the state level. And we need to make sure that we have very thoughtful local elected representatives within the school board, city councils, and county boards that can make sure that they are fighting for our shared values and make sure that they are able to message directly what is happening at the state level and how it's impacting us and why it's so important that we continue to work across our communities and across the state for what it is important to us. And I think here in Dane County, one of the things that we need to remind ourselves is we have great local government. And we need to not be afraid to talk to our friends and families across the state of Wisconsin. We all have family and friends that lives outside of Dane County, and make sure that people understand the decisions that are being made here in Madison and Capitol Hill and how they are directly impacting local governments elsewhere that don't have the strong progressive bases that we do have here, so that we have people engaged in making that change and running for local levels of government and making sure that we get that message out so that next fall, when we do have another election and we have assembly people and state senators up for election, that we can win more seats. And that happens through conversation.
And this April, when we have local elections, because I think this is exactly what the voucher is that it's a state decision and that it's going to boil down on the local level. And the locals are going to really have to deal with how are we going to, you know, create harmony in our community when there's this element that isn't really wanted. We have two more callers coming in. Popular topic today, yay. So next caller, will you tell us your name and your question, please?
Yeah, my name is Methuselah. My question is this. One of the more galling things I find about the proposed educational legislation is, if I'm not mistaken, there was a $10,000 tax credit that was awarded or that has been granted to wealthy people so they can send their children to exclusive private academies. I think that's especially dangerous because at the same time that they are gutting the public education system, they are subsidizing the private academies where obviously very few people can afford the five-figure tuition that's required for them. So I'm wondering if you could discuss that concern of mine. And thank you for a timely program. Bye.
Thank you for your question, Methuselah. Sorry, Melissa.
We did touch on this briefly when we were talking before, and it's absolutely a real concern. It is something that was planted in this budget that didn't get a lot of discussion or conversation. There were so many horrible things that it made it very hard for people who were watching the process to be able to grasp on to many of these things. And ultimately, you know, Carousel, just as I have children in the public schools, we do not receive tax credits when we have to go buy crayons and we need to go and pay for our children to take field trips. And, you know, there's a million additional added expenses to having young children in the schools. And we are writing checks left and right in order to fund that in a way that when we were children, that was not happening because of the way that the state funding has been attacking public education, unfortunately. And I think it's really unfortunate that there will be a tax credit for families who are already able to afford private schools. I think we should be alarmed by that.
I think when I talked earlier about what schools are likely to benefit from the voucher schools, one of the things we have to take a look at is in this community, there are certain schools that are popular, and they are, whether or not they decide to accept vouchers is another issue. But we do know, and I'm not going to mention names now, but there was a Catholic school in this region that most recently started advertising via yard signs that were put in on public easements, encouraging people to enroll in their school. And I'm guessing they know that they need to reach that critical mass of 25 voucher students or be able to entice more people for enrollment through this tax credit, which will help their school grow or sustain itself, something that public schools really can't do. But I there is a disadvantage. I mean, we don't need yard signs out in public places advertising all these different schools. We've got to figure out a way. How are we all going to work together?
Well, we have one more caller, but you actually brought up a point that I wanted to touch on really quickly, which is it? Do you think your statement about we'll wait and see which schools become voucher schools? Do you think so that there's something that we can do on the local level to put pressures to say we won't accept voucher schools in our community, or is that, you know, is that an activist dream not based in reality, that this is how it's going to be in a couple of years?
Well, I do think that, especially in Madison, and I think there are a couple other examples across Dane County of schools that could ultimately be eligible for vouchers to go into the schools, existing schools. And that's the way this budget was written. We're not going to see the influx currently of new voucher schools popping up in strip malls like it has happened in Florida. That's going to happen. But that's not going to happen for a couple of years. Currently, what's going to happen is we're going to be seeing existing schools accepting voucher students. So if you have your children enrolled in a fabulous private school and you think that they share our progressive values, I encourage the people that are on the boards of directors at those local private schools to make a decision that they're not going to be accepting this voucher money. That's a conversation. That's the importance of grassroots involvement. That's the importance of boards of directors made up of local people that have fabulous progressive values.
I think that's an interesting idea of somewhere where we can move that conversation along. We have now, the calls are just lining up. We are so fabulous today. I just love us. So here's the next caller. Can you tell us your name and your question, please?
Okay, yeah, my name is Dan, and you kind of actually touched on this a little bit a couple minutes ago about moving the conversation just through personal networks out statewide, and that's kind of what I wanted to bring up was all this great policy analysis is totally makes sense to me, and I think most of the people who are listening to this probably agree. But then there's the question of how do we get better organized. And I wanted to bring up the piece that John Nichols wrote. I think it came out just a few days ago, or maybe a week ago, something like that, where he talked about the next race for governor and what Scott Walker, what his prospects are, and how he's already out there in the summer county fair season. Sure. Shaking hands and making appearances and just getting out there, and there's nobody on the Democrat side, and I think this is the flip side of what you talked about earlier with the fear mongering that the Republicans are so good at. They also know how to connect with their base on a statewide scale, and I guess this is the reason I'm bringing this up is because somehow the Waukesha Republicans and the Southeast Wisconsin Republican machine has managed to do that on a statewide scale. And I think we need to take some lessons here as, with Dane County and the Madison progressive people somehow learning something from that and being able to reach out, form, the statewide networks. I guess that's all I'll say because I think your many of your ideas are going in that direction anyways. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Dan. I think you raised some good points, and I think that it's right part of this conversation. We want to have substance, but we still have 25 minutes left. Let's keep talking substance, but also acknowledge that what can we do as people that are involved in the political process, which proudly Dane County is. How can we keep moving this forward? Let's take one more caller. Caller, can you tell us your name and your question?
Hello?
Hello, you're on. Thanks for waiting.
That's a woman.
You're a first woman.
Can I speak now?
You can speak right now.
Okay, great. I would be interested, my name is Lori. I'd be interested in hearing the panelists address the question of the constitutionality of using state tax dollars in the form of vouchers or tax credits to pay for education that includes religious instruction.
I think that's a fabulous question, Lori. Melissa seems to pick up on that. What do you have to say, Melissa?
Lori, I think that's a great point. And I would point out that much of what is happening across the state, and it has been happening across the state for the last 3 years, goes to show that my colleagues on the right side of the aisle seem to have some misunderstandings about the way the U.S. Constitution is there and what constitutional law is.
I mean, and even the state constitution.
Even the state constitution, that's correct. And, you know, the public school creating a completely unaccountable new school system within our state through the vouchers, where some of that money is going to be going into religious education, is a big concern. We do have case law that we are anticipating will be tested through this. We can also point to women's choice issues, constitutionality of having doctors who were having admittance within a certain miles of clinics, another example of constitutional law that's being tested, the voting registration and ID, another example of constitutional law. What we need to remember is that the folks that we are serving with on the right side of the aisle don't care about our Constitution, and it is our job to continue reminding them that the Constitution is there to protect all of us. The only area that I have a sense that they care about the Constitution is when it comes to gun rights. And unfortunately, I tend to think they are pushing that even farther than what they really should be doing there as well.
And what is the Constitution? And I know we're not legal scholars in this room, but my understanding, and let me know, Teresa and Melissa, if you think this is accurate, is that you can't fund religious schools with private money, but that the vouchers can still exist as long as they allow an option out of an individual to, they don't have to attend the Bible study class, but they can attend everything out. I bet I'm skipping some nuances there, but is that sort of the gist?
Well, I think we really don't know yet. I mean, one of the issues here is that there are no rules. This is
so
basically,
me.
Yeah,
right,
so
right.
Sue me.
Let's see what happens.
And unfortunately, maybe Melissa knows, but I'm not aware of any organization yet that's taking this on in terms of the issue of public funding of private and religious schools and taking it to the courts. And unfortunately, it will be a very difficult battle because the voucher, as we know, the voucher school program nationally is funded by some very, very large wealthy families and entities in this country. So I'm concerned that we do have, for instance, Planned Parenthood going after the reproductive rights stuff. I have to say that I'm not aware of anybody taking on this court battle.
Maybe separation of church and state. I'm forgetting the name.
Freedom from religion. And
yes.
That, you know, the problem there that I see is I they need to change their name. Maybe they have, but Freedom from Religion works just fine in Madison on a larger basis nationwide. Is a more difficult sell in terms of getting people to get, you know, basically want to join in. They might like the principle, but they're a little bit afraid of some of the other religious components. So I don't know. Politically, it's difficult. But, you know, right now, after the recall, we should have the best database that we've ever had in the state of people who are interested in these issues. And I don't know. One of the complaints I've heard is that people don't know who is really organizing all these people. There's so many different groups. You open up your email and you're getting 20 requests for money from 20 different groups that are all, quote, progressive. And I think one of the things that we have to do is we have to coalesce around some of these issues, and we have to take advantage of the people we know who are out in these other communities who got involved. I was stunned during our last election season when I asked about local Democratic parties in some counties, and I was told that, well, this county didn't really have any organization. Well, that's something we've got to do around all these issues. Is we have to have organizations outside of Madison. So I know I'm getting kind of covering both callers in terms of their comments, but if we're going to have a reaction to these things that is coordinated and that extends beyond Madison, we certainly were given an opportunity to find out who around the state shares our values. We've got their names. We need we need to be better at organizing and getting these people behind.
Well, and maybe that's a good transition to the next sort of line of questions. First of all, I want to remind everyone this is Public Affair with Carousel Baird. We have Representative Therese Brousseau and Representative Melissa Sargent with us this afternoon. We welcome your questions. You can call into area code 608-256-2001 or toll free area code 866-899-WART. You can send us a message at Twitter at WORT Talk, or you can send us a message on our Facebook page at Public Affair 88.9 FM Madison. Well, I think so. One of the callers, Dan, talked about what you're talking about of how do we get ready for re-election two Novembers from now, just a year and a couple of months from now for governors. And I think one of the things that we can talk about more universally on a statewide basis is how's the economy doing? You know, we don't have to attack the current governor on education. We certainly can, though, or on workers' rights or on women's rights. We can, and we have valid arguments, but we can also attack him on how's the economy going. So maybe transition a little bit on that in the budget. You know, what's sort of the thought that you guys have about are there efforts being made to move the economy forward? I know that he's decreased W-2 funding by $13.4 million with the assumption that W-2 needs will go down by 1% each month, but in fact they're still going up. So they have the idea in place, but nothing to actually execute the idea.
I think that that is a real concern that many of us have. And, you know, one of the things that I hear from people is they say it seems like we're always on the defense. We're always saying, oh, that's a bad idea, that's a bad idea. But I would argue that we have spent an awful lot of time listening to people all over the state of Wisconsin about this budget and about what it is that they value that should have been included in a budget. And the Republican-run Joint Finance Committee had 4 hearings across the state that touched less than 2% of the population. And our caucus traveled the state and had more hearings than I can count. Kitchen table cabinet talks, talks in people's living rooms, talks in school cafeterias about what it is that people care about. And what we heard over and over again is that people really want to make sure that we have family-sustaining jobs. And in order to have family-sustaining jobs, we had to have a government that values bringing people up, and that is investing in education at all levels. Unfortunately, our technical colleges have seen drastic cuts. We have had our university system punished for the fact that they had a reserve fund, as any good business should have. We are refusing billions of dollars of our tax money to come back to ensure the people in our state that are the most vulnerable. That would have brought in $2.4 billion over the next 8 years, and it would have saved us just in this budget $119 million to our taxpayers. This is already money that we have sent in to the feds that would be coming back to us, and I would argue that it would create over 10,000 jobs across the state. That is a great job plan, and those jobs inevitably would be affecting women more than men, because women typically are more employed in health care jobs, and so it would affect families in a positive way, and they are jobs that pay families living wages. And if we're going to talk about a job plan, I would say that turning down that Badger Care expansion was the biggest mistake that our state made in this budget.
Carousel, I really think that the education component of this governor's policies or whatever is something that is making some changes now around the state, because school administrators and superintendents and teachers they do understand now how this is impacting their schools and the difficulty they have putting together budgets. And I understand that around the state there was a lot of pushback on the voucher thing. And I think that that is a real opportunity for us. It's taken a long time for local school districts to have the courage to speak against their current legislator, a Republican, in terms of what the budget has been doing to schools. On the jobs issue, there's no question that this is something we have concentrated on and the Republicans have not. And what bothers me is that for some reason it hasn't been sticking the way we would like. And I think that what we've got with this governor and these Republicans is they have basically two agendas, and it doesn't include jobs. One is a social agenda. They are remaking Wisconsin into their value system, and we're seeing a lot of social policy, and we've seen it all along rather than job creation policy. And the other is reshaping, I wouldn't say reshaping government, but diminishing government's role in our lives is another big part of their agenda, which, and what we've seen is that means cutting social programs and what we used to call the safety net, et cetera. So those are the two, their two primary interests, and it hasn't been creating jobs. And we have to question, why are they getting away with that? Why is this governor able to walk into a business in another community and act like he, you know, the famous person, and the workers have to stand behind him smiling when they've taken reductions in their benefits, reductions in their salary, they're working 2-3 jobs. And maybe Melissa and some of the listeners have some ideas. How do we get people, I guess, to understand that the Republicans have not been working on job creation? Democrats have had fabulous bills out there that the Republicans will not take up because they will not pass something that is our idea.
We have one caller, but I think this is a good conversation about not only is there no details about jobs, but we also are underlying the safety net. So individuals that, if the government's not going to help them get jobs, you would hope the government isn't going to undermine their ability to live between two jobs. And this is actually what the government is doing. You take away the safety net. Not only are they not helping you find a job, they're actually making your life worse when you're transitioning between the two. But let's take a caller first. Hello, you are on the air. Can you tell us your name and your question?
Yeah, my name is Thomas. The comment I've got is what they want to do is just like they've done with jobs, is that they want a two-tier system. They don't want the poor people educated, the majority. They only want an elite educated so they continue their control of the economy as well as the education. If you look at Texas, you'll find out that their education system is based on the books that they get from these big publishers, but they're all basically cut out of any real historical references or anything else. And so I think that's one thing that is going to happen to the public education. They just don't want it. And as long as the people are don't get educated, that's fine for them. And I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
You know, that's already happening in Wisconsin. It's been happening for a number of years in a number of different areas. But I talked to a teacher just over the weekend, and he talked about the fact that with all of this information on the government basically having records on people's cell phone usage and the drone issue and all of these things, he decided that he was going to talk about the Patriot Act. And he was approached by the principal, who said that she was receiving, he or she was receiving complaints, and he said he was presenting just the facts, what the Patriot Act did and what was happening now and how that was related to the Patriot Act, but some parent complained, and so he was told to back off. And we had the same issue a number of years ago when it was the teaching of creationism that might still be happening. But we have a situation in Wisconsin already where teachers are a bit reticent to teach certain things, knowing that there might be backlash in the community from some of the parents and even sometimes some of the kids in school. So Texas is not alone in having, unfortunately, maybe watered down education, that we are seeing that happen in some areas of Wisconsin already, and won't name names.
And this budget is just another piece of it.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's go back a little bit. Melissa, you talked about the cut to BadgerCare and the rejection of the federal funding. I know that the cut's going to be approximately 90,000 families will be cut from access to BadgerCare. What can you speak more to that and sort of the impact it will have locally as well?
Right here, from the best estimates that we have in Dane County, it looks like we're going to have about 5,000 people losing health care coverage, which is startling because when we hear Governor Walker talking as he's signing the budget, he's saying everyone that needs health insurance is going to be able to have it. Well, there's 5,000 families that are not going to be covered that currently are.
That he's cutting.
They can go to the federal exchange as an option, but there is a higher deductible on the federal exchange. There is also the challenge of having children covered under one system and the parents under another system. Insurance systems are very hard to navigate. So once you learn your way through one, oftentimes it's more overwhelming for a family. They decide, I'm just going to take care of my kids. I'm not going to take care of myself. And all of a sudden, they're there in the emergency room when a crisis hits. And on top of the fact that they can be earning, for a family of four, less than $23,000 a year, that's what it means to be eligible. Well, if you can remember earlier today, we were talking about a family of four being eligible for assistance for schools at $71,000. We have a dichotomy mm-hmm. going on here. We don't have equal definitions depending on what we're talking about. So there absolutely is an attack on the poor. Also included in the budget, not just with the health insurance, not just with the attack on public education, but people who are currently eligible for food shares. They are also being attacked. They have to do job training. They have to work a certain number of hours a week in order to be eligible for food for their family. It's the American dream to have many jobs, right? I mean, we don't want to see our children. We don't want to have a personal life. It's the American dream. We can all have four jobs.
Well, our conversation last week, if you live in Monona and you don't see your children and you don't tell them about bullying, you're going to get a fine. But that's last week. We only have a couple more minutes, but I do want to, you know, Therese, you were going to say a couple things about this as well.
Well, you know, this is something that really needs a full show as well, which is the war on the poor. The war, everything from the reduction of wages and benefits, and then if you do lose your job, which is easier to do now because they have redefined misconduct to make it easier for employers to fire employees. Then if you are fired, you have great difficulty now getting food shares, getting unemployment compensation. People say, well, what's wrong with having to apply for four jobs a week? Well, if you live in an area where there is no employment and you need transportation to go somewhere and you have to pay for gas to go places to apply for jobs, whether or not they've got any, I mean, coming up with four jobs to apply for in some communities is a challenge. Anyway, they've thrown up barrier after barrier to the poor at the same time that the private sector is reducing wages and, as we saw, as we've heard too, going to more and more limited term, you know, part-time employment where they don't have to offer benefits. I think we all know that Walmart has had a lot of people on BadgerCare. They were number one in our state at one point. I don't know if they are now. But anyway, there's this amazing catering to the business. I don't want to say the business community because the business community means many different things. But to big business that doesn't want to pay their workers, wants government to educate their workers, to train their workers at government taxpayer expense, but then they're not going to give them a living wage. They're not going
to
give them benefits. Yeah. And it's just there that it's a whole at least an hour to talk about what they see. I think they're trying to create a very low paid workforce, and then they can say to us, "Well, we didn't outsource jobs; we brought them back home, and we're mm-hmm. you know we're paying you as little as we can, but your job is here, and you should be happy."
We only have a couple more minutes. How about some final thoughts on what can we do here in Madison? I mean, I think it's clear that we can expect the policies from this budget to start trickling down. And what worries me on a local level, and this is also another conversation, is that it'll take a half a year or a year for it to trickle down so that there will be a disconnect between, you know, acknowledging that it's a state budget issue. But so if that's what we can expect in Madison and Dane County, what do you think we can do? Sort of, if you have sort of a 1 minute wrap up or one, you know, a thought of here's how we move forward, because it's not pretty, but we still have to do it. We're still here. You know?
Well, I think really what it comes down to, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, is we need to be having conversations with people. There are so many horrible things that were put in this budget. And, you know, the media right now, I mean, thank goodness for Wart, the media right now is not covering it. Teresa and I have reached out to many media outlets in Dane County, and people don't want to talk to us. They don't want to hear our side of the story. They don't want to hear what it is that we would have done different. And we need to make sure that that message gets out. And that's why we depend on people in Dane County and the great listeners of Wart to have those conversations with people across the state. We all have friends and family that don't live in Dane County, and we need to make sure people are educated on the fact that this budget increases the structural deficit for the state of Wisconsin by $500 million. This is from the party that believes in fiscal responsibility. This budget is going to increase our property taxes. This budget is going to create a second public school system that is unaccountable, that is not way to build jobs and to build an educated society for the future. This budget is preventing people from having health care for their family so that they can be healthy, so that they can have jobs. This is not a responsible budget. This does not represent the values of Wisconsin, the progressive way of listening to the people in our communities and doing things based on what it is that the community is asking for. This was a budget that was crafted in back rooms with special interest lobbyists, unfortunately not listening to the will of the people.
I think we're going to have to leave it with those final words. You guys have been phenomenal, as always. I like it when we end a show knowing that we can talk even more about this, because hopefully this will generate conversations out there. I want to thank Melissa Sargent, Representative Melissa Sargent, and Representative Therese Brousseau for joining me tonight. I want to thank Yvonne for taking our phone calls and Rachel Punzak for engineering us today. My name's Carousel Baird. You are listening to A Public Affair. Thanks.